12 Uhr, ich kriege von hinten ein positives Signal, dass das mit der Verbindung soweit klappt. Würde jetzt gleich auf Englisch hinüberwechseln. Wir haben die Veranstalter das Signal gegeben, ich erreiche einen größeren Publikumskreis, wenn ich auf Englisch spreche. Ich hoffe, dass es jedem soweit recht. Es gibt keinen großen Publikum. My first interest in computers started in 1979, when my dad, as a physicist, bought one of those Hewlett-Packard desktop computers with a whopping 31 kilobyte of memory. On one of my birthdays, I became proud owner of an instruction manual, and after a thorough examination by my dad and washing my hands properly, I was allowed to touch dad's machine. More than 30 years later, I have changed a bit. I realized I need a second pair of glasses in order to be able to read my manuscript properly. I have obtained a PhD in mathematics and currently work as a professor of computer networking at Rostock University. One of the results I'm particularly proud of in the early 90s consisted of a parallel program execution on thousands of workstations which were distributed over all five continents. Not like SETI at home, but completely parallel computation with lots of communication going on during the execution. During this time, computing also has changed. Today, for the first time, we have a technology which makes the entire human cultural production, music, movies, books, poems, scientific reports available to every person on the planet. Today, for the first time, we have a technology which allows us to share, to support, to make friends with people on the other side of the globe, living in different cultures, speaking different languages. Today, for the first time in history, we have a technology of global abundance. At least in the digital, cultural domain, and for those with access to computer and internet. So, are we happy? Are we embracing this opportunity to learn, to share, to make friends, to improve our lives? Let us have a look at three cartoons here. Let us enter a shop where they sell NSA tracking devices. And the sales assistant explains, yeah, we used to call them cell phones. Now, obviously, this is bad marketing. Let's improve this way. Here, the larger guy says, we want to implant this RFID tag in you. And the smaller guy gives the right answer, that violates the rights. Well, every marketing manager and every politician should know this is the wrong approach. The marketing slogan should be, we want to implement this RFID tag in you, and it's also a cell phone, digital camera, and MP3 player. Looks like the little guy thinks this is cool. But I really don't understand why these things are used as jokes. They describe reality. And it is just so easy. You just have to get the marketing right, as in this cartoon. Isn't it great? We have to pay nothing for the bar. And the second pig says, yeah, and even the food is free. The punchline of the joke is below. Let me scroll it into your view. If you're not paying for it, you're not the customer. You are the product being sold. However, it looks like this is working perfect. With more than 900 million Facebook users worldwide, this company is making money on your data. And these days, the starting Facebook in stock been asking myself here is, what is going wrong here? We could be using this exciting technology to make friends, to learn, to educate ourselves, and make this world a better place. But we are using it unknowingly to subject ourselves under a pressure to show normative behavior, as if there were this 11th commandment. You probably know the 11th commandment. You shall not deviate from the norm of the social average. I found myself two answers, and this is what I would like to talk to you about today. The first answer is of a political and philosophical nature, and I will spend some 8 to 10 minutes on this. And I do not know how to fix that problem. The second answer is of a technological nature, and I will spend the rest of my talk on this, since I guess we can at least partially fix that problem. So, ready to get started on part one? Let's roll. When we are talking about surveillance, the panopticon is a common picture, a prison, with one guy in the center, and the metaphor implying that whenever we are watched by a single person, or even when we believe we are watched, we start changing our behavior. When looking at this picture, it somehow reminds us, maybe from a chicken farm. An endless row of farmed animals. Once a day, the farmer comes and collects the eggs. We humans are similar. We are just much easier to be kept as cattle, since we carry the fence in our minds. That fence is called freedom, and it works as follows. We have that fantastic technology that billions of people on this planet could work together, could share, educate, live, and support each other. But there is this little devil. And I apologize for abusing the PSD logo for a devil here. There is this little devil which says, you are free, you are responsible for your own life, it's up to you. And we dash off in all directions trying to get the biggest piece of the cake. Think of the ad market, for example. On SourceForge, there are more than 300,000 open source projects of people helping each other to write good software. And then, suddenly, there is this interesting idea of making money with an ad. The message is, you are free to get a larger piece of the cake. Don't you want a larger piece of the cake? And off we dash and produce over 500,000 closed source of applications. Practically nobody can earn a living on that, but have you ever tried to find an open source there are some 50 or 60 of those, and that's it. Interestingly enough, the same thing with Wikipedia. We start with that big silo of human knowledge, a fantastic form of cooperation and sharing, but of course some users want to be more important than others. So we get badges, we get records, we get administrators, check users, bureaucrats, arbitrators, we even need an arbitration committee. As Orwell said, some animals are more good than others. I'm not trying to ridicule this. I'm just the same. Did I already tell you about my academic title and how important I am? Then we get these edit marks. Up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Do redo, do redo, do redo. We see a visualization here of an edit history from Wikipedia. I mean, this article is about chocolate. To solve the conflict, can we have two articles on chocolate, please? Or are we running out of file space here? Or, oh, it's about the correct version of the article. So, besides that, the admin, the majority, great idea. Let's vote to find the truth. It's not Alice, it's not Bob, it's the majority. Can't say anything against the majority, can you? Or rather, you should not say that, because they are more than you. You shall not deviate from the norm of the social average, remember? So, in the end, It's not about sharing an individual perception. It's about domination and about who gets the largest piece of the cake and who is defining that solution. Now, I can't fix that part. My brain works the same way, and I find it very difficult to change the way it works. But fortunately, there is a second part, the network. We decided. And I think we can fix it. And let me present one suggestion of how we could do so in the second part of my talk. If you have a look at the title of my talk, it says Econ Refused. And if you are a Unix programmer, you recognize it as the error of not being able to set up a connection to another device. In my personal spy and tracking device, I mean this thing here, there are numerous communication technologies. And well, there's Bluetooth, there's Wi-Fi, four different flavors, there's NFC, there's Zigbee, there's all kinds of different phone standards here in the second row. There is GPS, USB, there is AirDAL, all kinds of communication technologies. Hard to fit all the logos on one slide. So we might assume that communication is easy. However, it looks like it's not. The problem is that most of these technologies have been restricted. They are crippled by intentional defect. The goal of this defect is to prevent the user from doing something or to force him to do things in a particular manner. Of course, some restrictions can be removed by most of us, I guess, but probably not by a John Doe user. Let me give you some examples. Wi-Fi has many modes where users cannot communicate freely. Modes where client hardware cannot immediately straight away out of the box operate as access points. Modes where clients connected to an access point cannot communicate with each other, which we have in our local universal network. Modes where clients cannot connect to each other without an access point, and so on. Bluetooth uses numerous profiles, and many devices have many useful profiles turned off. iPhone, for example, not able to use the OBEX protocol, short of jailbreaking. Many Bluetooth connections simply don't work. If the peripheral is from a different manufacturer, for GPS until 2000, the high positional accuracy was not generally available, but reduced to 100 meters, and there are still restrictions for altitudes more than 18 kilometers, which causes problems to amateur models. UMTS, as it is trained, but you can't send an MS to each house because there is no connection to the base station. You're sitting in the canteen and you're eating. Probably someone will be going to town soon and could give you a lift in his car. To find that person, you must ask Google Mail, Twitter, Facebook, well, some kind of service provider. You'll have to pay for this in dollars, in euros, or with your data. Of course, the data retention commissioner of CDC is interested in learning about all your communication because this helps fight terrorism. And actually, it's probably always nice to be able to watch people who could vote you out of office. But this doesn't apply here anyhow, so let's move on. I could, of course, also send out a beacon of inquiry, peer-to-peer mode of communication. Somebody going to town and giving me a lift, and those who are willing to listen and to do so, just straight away immediately reply. I would like to call this idea the authority of the recipient. It is the recipient, and only the recipient, who decides if communication is going to take place. Econ Refused, in this regard, is the authority of the recipient. Needless to say, of course, I'm a Wikipedia inclusionist. I think much of this is about old concepts that we see them here, meeting new mindsets and new technologies. Let's have a few at some of these encounters. First example, data stores. Usually, data is located on a hard drive. Now, sometimes
We still have this interesting belief
that data are physical objects. And thus, it might be a good idea to store them in a physically safe place. Well, we know physically safe places have a number of nasty side effects. Physical objects can be stolen, they can be searched, they can be lost, they can be damaged. The same, unfortunately, is true for passwords. You might be aware of this cold boot attack, where, well, a victim might feel safe because he's using this full disk encryption. This is just fine. So we allow the victim to boot his machine, enter his disk encryption password, leave the machine unattended for the toilet break, and of course our victim will do a screen lock in the meantime. So what we will do in the meantime is we will open the cover of his device. We will spray some duster spray on the memory chips and thereby freeze the data in the case. We will remove the battery pack. We will reboot the machine with some fancy software, which is open source, and you can find at Princeton University available near to that link. We will capture a memory dump. We will use again some suitable software you can find here to locate the encryption key in memory and the concept of data in a safe, secure physical location is questioned again. I think this concept is fundamentally broken. There is only one good reason to have data as at a single location in unencrypted form, namely that I will be viewing it within the next few seconds. So let's see, maybe we can do something with that concept, twist it around and look at the whole thing from a different point of view. One of the many possibilities is to think of secret sharing. So let's use a straight line with coordinates. We pick a point, we measure the distance, and of course you will have recognized the ASCII coding inherent here in the distance. So let's start to read this whole thing. We the continuous here. So let's look like it's an ASCII coding here. So let's start to read. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, it's the beginning of the US Constitution. So the idea is, of course, in practical application, we'll have to look into a few messy details of coding here, but essentially the idea is every distance encodes a text. Now let's go into two dimensions, and we have our document here, which is of interest, and we choose a polynomial of degree 6, an arbitrary one. I'll pick that one. There are many other polynomials. I will pick this polynomial kind of by random. So here it is. I pick 9 points on this polynomial, and I forget the green dot and the polynomial. Now, some of the dots I store on my computer. Some of the other dots I store somewhere in the net. I can even store them with Google, since well, without the other dots, they are completely random. Whoever has only the few dots is not able to reconstruct the document. Let's assume I want to reconstruct the original document, which was the green dot. I need to reconstruct the polynomial, which was of degree 6, so for this, I need 7 dots. So I take my 3 dots, I ask a few of my friends for other dots, so I get 4 dots. Well, the number of additional dots got lost, I don't mind, this is a part of the concept here, and I reconstruct the polynomial. Here it is. On the axis, I again find the green dot, which, according to the coding, is my document. So, what has been achieved here? The idea is, initially, split the document into shares. Distribute the shares over your disk, over the network, over some cloud provider, reconstruct the document from k shares out of n. I'm safe from an attacker, since less than k shares give you 0 information on the document. The friends where you store the network shares, the cloud providers, even your own machine, unless an attacker gets hold of k or more shares, learns nothing. And you have some backup. Since you may lose n minus k shares, for which is way enough to protect against all kinds of brute force attacks. You blow this up algorithmically to get, say, 32 terabytes in pseudorandom garbage, which is enough to protect you throughout your digital life, and you use this as one-time pack. You produce two times of them. Remove one from the system, nobody can read your files. Lose both, and have an attacker grab K or more shares, and you lose your files. So, yeah, in both directions, pretty nice on a good side. Of course, we can make numerous backup copies of these keys and hide them in some safe places. The thing is quite easy with data storage of that size. The only interesting issue here is it's not plug and play, but what it soon may be. There is, if you check out this website, an interesting form of file system. It's the whole file system, which is working into a direction of making this more readily available. The effect of all this is we have a data store which has less unwanted side effects. You can dump your hard drive in the garbage, it just contains random noise. You don't have to be afraid that someone picks it up, mounts it at the Linux box, does some double D fancy reading on it, and reconstructs the content. Realized in the previous example that data stores sometimes do something different than they should. Now let's have a closer look at communication. What do we expect from communication? First, we need a device for the end user. That one? Probably not a device which records my position without explicit approval. This device maybe. Probably not a device where the manufacturer gives away the crypto keys for anyone who is interested. A device where everything is open source, with the exception of some root keys and maybe some embedded application kill switch. Maybe this one. Well, not a device where I don't know yet what is wrong with. So, certainly, some of these guys. I think you got the idea I'm at here. A device where the owner has complete authority over the device. Next, we need some kind of identity. Certainly not something of this kind, but rather of a more abstract nature, a mathematically encoded write or a digital key or something like that. Now, communication means that there is some kind of correlation of what is going on my device and what is going on your device. Maybe there is the help of some cloud or some infrastructure which is used to implement that. As a first example, let us have a look at email. So here we have Alice. She connects to that cloud with her device and produces some nice message. A little bit later, Alice is gone, is no longer connected to the cloud. A little bit later again, Bob connects to the cloud and receives that fancy message. This is what we want email to be. There are a number of common concepts usually connected with email which are not really part of what we want. Do we need a mailbox which stores our email? Do we need a mail provider or a mail server? These are both concepts which are susceptible to data retention, to censor, to all kinds of things we don't want. Do we want a trusted, quote, trusted, unquote, mail system? To give you a little bit of an idea what I mean with these quotes here, let us look into such a quote, trusted email. So here's Alice. Alice has a message for Bob, so she wants to keep that message confidential, so she encrypts it in a manner which can be understood by her first provider. She sends it to the provider, and this is the yes, it did. It worked here, it didn't work here, okay. One more reminder, eventually I well, better performing presentation systems here, because it doesn't show me the animation here, but I'm a little irritated what is wrong here. Okay, so we saw that green box walking down, then the provider one is set, the blue one, blue thing now. So what is provider two doing? It sends the message to Bob. Interesting. It's yellow. Well, never mind. Bob receives the message, decodes it, and gets the fancy message. And it was secure. Why? Because it was encrypted all the time. Wait a minute. Why was the box first green, then blue, then yellow? To understand that part, let's have a little bit closer look what the provider is doing here by looking under the cover. So essentially, the provider is getting an encoded message. Message encoded for you, encrypts it, gets the message, re-encrypts it, so that provider 2 understands it, and we get a different message. Now that's actually very interesting, because there is this blonde girl here, and she's interested in reading these messages. And actually, she can. And the only argumentation why the system needs to be trusted is the mere fact that there is a law which says she is not allowed to read that. And, well, of course, we are very much relaxed now because everyone, of course, is adhering to the laws. Also, this fancy blonde lady will adhere to the law and she will not read our emails. So this is trusted mail. Please believe me, and maybe if you read between the lines, you understand why there are these red quotes. So let's come back to an understanding how email could be fixed, how email could be implemented if we want email only to consist of those elements we found out in our requirements engineer. Okay, so let's have a look. This is Alice. She produces her message, and from her message, she generates a large number of shares, a really large number of shares, using one of the principles we have seen in the example for the data set. Let's say her message is 1K, she produces 1K of shares, large number of shares. 1K times 1K is 1M, that's really not big data, so that's not a big problem here, and she distributes these all over the web. Now, Bob checks his email, which means he must collect a sufficient number of shares, reconstruct that polynomial, as we saw in the first example, and he gets his message. So that's fine. What is the result? Mail never gets stored at a single node. End-to-end encryption between Alice and Bob still ensures privacy, even when all shareholders would collude. There is not really an easy way of tracking who communicates with whom. And in the next example, we'll even make this a little bit more tight. But we have a small problem. How does Bob know where to collect all these slides? Well, actually, there are numerous possible strategies to do so. We could do searching in small group networks, as Freenet is doing. We could look at collusions in random blocks and structured graphs. We could look at the Tor hidden service location mechanism. We could look at distributed hash tables. We could look at peer-to-peer search mechanisms. So there are numerous possibilities to solve that problem. Just to give you an idea of one possible approach, I would like to allude a little bit to the well-known Kademlia algorithm. All of those who have been looking into the technology of file sharing know what I'm talking about here. The idea essentially is we give all the nodes a number which is not strictly connected with the IP address, but is out of a large number space. And let's assume Bob wants to find his email, and he knows there is like a type of hash procedure where he produces a large number of nodes, so there are a large number of nodes he should check. If he checks a certain subset, he will be able to reconstruct his message. So let's assume Bob, one of the nodes he is looking for is this node here with that number. So on this node, I will have a routing table which has a 0-bit prefix match. So the 0-bit we see, okay, we have a different We look through the table and we might find even a 2-week prefix match. That's good, even better than we expected. So we get something which matches this pattern. Assume we have a node like this here. And now we have a pattern matching this prefix. And we arrive at our next step in the journey. Now it's this node wanting to find that node. And we find, expect to find that the routing table is constructed in that way, a 3-bit prefix. So we have 101 for sure. And we have an additional bit matching our target. So the whole thing continues like that. And after a number of steps, let's say we have 80-bit length in these identifiers. After 80 steps, we have found this node even without any help of a DNS system or SWAG. OK, so this is one of the many possibilities we have. There are possibilities. I will not go into detail. I will move on to a third example. We, of course, still have one issue here, which is connected with finding out who is communicating with whom. So we arrive at the issue of anonymous communication or at traffic analysis. You're probably aware of both of these tools here, which are tools for anonymous communication, and most of them assume that nobody is able to do traffic analysis. If you look at a little bit closer at the assumptions, most say, well, traffic analysis still could be a problem, but it is a very difficult thing to do traffic analysis on a global scale. So probably this agency today is not yet able to do global traffic analysis, but if you follow Wired and checked out that they're planning to build a nice fancy building in Utah, probably they will be soon. So what would they do? Let's look at this. This is a timeline of a political blog. There are certain postings to the blog, and for the red postings, we want to know who's off. Well, of course, there are the usual suspects. Bad luck, there are no log files. The authors used Tor. So let us check, when have these guys been online? That's their online times. So let's see. She hasn't been online early enough. I can hire her. What about him? We know Tor had maybe had, like, let's see, all these devices, let's say 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes delay. Well, in practice, it's even less, so let's say this is 2 hours. So he wasn't online when this was posted. We can discard that. Now it's a little bit more complicated here, so let's see. The traffic volume. Let's check how much they send in little packets. So this kind of like would be the case. Well, he could be. What if it was this line? Okay, that's way too few traffic. This will not work out, we can discard her. So there is a good guess that this guy is responsible for these postings. So this is kind of nice. But let's assume the situation had been like that. Now we see, probably it will be very difficult to find out who really sent which packet. So you see, the effect we are at is this. We're basically staying in a mode where we are sending all the time. Well, maybe that's stupid, because this is producing too much traffic. But maybe that's not so bad, because as long as everybody is going at high speed, this is just fine. That is the situation which would be bad. So we could ask ourselves, is there really a good use for downtime in communication equipment? I mean, actually, we could be sending all the time. Let's look at this tree-shaped network, for example. Every node sends a packet first to the left, then to the right, then upstream. Then to the left, then to the right, then upstream. Left, right, upstream. Every node is sending like that all the time. So the information a traffic analyst gets is zero. Because we haven't even built this type of network, we know how the traffic analysis looks like. We can't get any information out of traffic analysis. Well, the nice thing even is, the more nodes participate in such a system, the more efficient it gets. from a structural situation where all our directors are connecting to the network, but we are using our black box here, which kind of is doing the communication. Our essential connection to the world is this one. We have some few of our stores up here. We might have a local store, which contains random data. We have some stores here with our friends or with some providers, which also contain random data, and it's just the combination of all this, which provides us a safe store as well. So what we see here, we need probably a change of concept. With the number of steps I have shown, we need tamper-proof devices, we need minimalistic functionality, we could have the concept of staying always on, always sending packets, storing data using secret sharing, offering services with minimalistic properties, where we have complete service authority, but we don't have any unwanted side effects like mails lying around at some provider or whatever. We actually want to get rid of these types of funny and nasty bugs which are around, and if you look at web pages, they show up on practically every web page as well, so I made a few screenshots to see, well, with one of these tools you can find, practically every web page you get is contaminated with at least some 10 or 15 of these things, where essentially I only want the content, which probably should be very easy if I have some device which helps me removing all these types. We also, if we are not surfing directly on the net, but we are surfing on like one of these black boxes which play a proxy role, we are also getting rid of these types of things that content is looking like that. Because we could do another step. We could say, well, we could use a network, a layered network on these black boxes. So you are from Canada, you are from France, you are from India. So if I want to read something which isn't available in my country, I merely serve on that second level of network black boxes. I don't make a request from my own node. I just kind of forward it to you or forward it to you and someone kind of will take out important information I'm interested in, and someone will filter out all the bugs I showed and I will get that information. So it's actually kind of quite interesting to see, because if we have a look at the internet as it is working these days, we realize in many cases it is broken in a funny manner, in a funny way. I would like to show you here a small video connected with that. I hope I get that started properly. Innocent search, which is fine, you get the answer. Now let's look for Falun Gong, which is a very bad idea from a Chinese authority point of view. What do we get? Bong, the internet is broken, we get a hard reset, if you ask. A Chinese search engine, for that it's really a hard reset, so we could try and try again. We are just getting the information that the connection was reset, like we had no connection, or we're running into a firewall. It takes some 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes, then you are kind of like erased again from the list of nodes which are requiring stupid information, and you get back to normal activity. So what we see here in many countries, actually the internet is broken on a regular kind of basis. If you're interested in some things, you might end up with these types of effects, which of course are somehow similar. Click back. That's also one of the side effects here. Okay. So actually, it would really be interesting to have a completely different approach to networking, where we are not connecting to the internet, but where we are connecting to a network of these kinds of black boxes. Every black box organizes that content. It is happy to obtain in a particular country and forwards it to you. And you of course see we have a number of nice dots we can connect now. We have our storage, so a few things kind of nicely fit in. We can do our storage solution I showed at the first example. number of students like to build one of these parts here, well, not in the picture, but like in the abstract way, to see how could we do some kind of remote surfing, some kind of improving email systems. And it's kind of like driven a little bit with what will be one of my last slides now. Unless we're challenging the state of the art, we will not succeed. So we should try. Maybe these things work out somehow. With regard to the mechanics, I should come to a conclusion soon. And I was thinking, every good talk must finish with a conclusion. So you must go home with a statement along the lines, well, that's it, what I have to do. Actually, well, I'm not so sure whether this is a good style to do so. They actually teach you to do that and to deliver that take-home message in scientific conferences. And you see, scientific conferences, in my perception, are very similar to this philosophical political style I had at the beginning. So it's about, like, at the end, you have presented your theory, so you take out this big stick and you have to knock down all alternative ideas. So my idea is the best, and that's kind of like the approach of science. And I don't mind that idea so much, so I didn't prepare like that take-home message, but I thought, well, there must be some good conclusion of the talk, and I was sitting in the hotel at the breakfast, and then I found this napkin, where it said, inspiration can hit you at any time. Okay. My claim here is not to have reinvented something or to have found yet another better approach to networking, but it's the thought, wouldn't it be nice if some of us would start working a little bit into that direction, into a direction of a network which might be in the very details completely different from that approach, but which would help us taking a different look at email, at storage, at communication. And then I had that big smile, because when I looked what it said on the lower lines of this napkin, of course they here have also the logo of the hotel. I will not read the logo of the hotel, but I like the remaining part here. Wake up to a better world. Maybe it's helpful. Thank you very much for listening. Are there some questions? Remarks?
Yeah. Do we have a mic or?
We have a mic. We have a mic. Colleagues jumping here and picking up the mic and turning it on. So I hope we can get the communication managed here.
Test proof. Yeah, possible. I suppose you know of the FreedomBox project and Project Dunaway. They are trying to package like the Tor software, forum software, IRC servers into a small plug computer. So that might be some inspiration for the people here. And also, there are several projects trying to build more usable social socket layers, like combining P2P infrastructure with Trustpress to provide easy-to-use APIs for application developers like the Global Square, Briar, and SecureShare. I'm from SecureShare, by the way, and I will have a talk on Sunday at noon, so you might be interested in that. So I think there's actually some development going on in this direction. We just need to find some way to really expose the industry to these ideas, because right now the bleeding edge, if you might say so, is more like in activist circles and open source circles, and we just don't have the financial power to really get widespread adoption in the next few months if we just keep going like this. So if you have any suggestions how to push this into the market, if you want to say so, please come to me or to him, or find some channel to give it to the project. Yeah. Maybe you have some suggestions.
I think this is an excellent idea, and I think we should also see how we could join forces on that. I have two short thoughts I would would like to give on that. There is, of course, the problem that I like that activist development very much, and I'm looking at the Freedom Box very closely, I'm following that activity. On the other hand, we must be very careful to package these things in the right way for people, because Tor is a very nice solution, and Tor comes with a big collection of knowledge you must have to install the browser bundle to know about DNS problems with Tor, and, which you can't expect my grandman to do so. So there is, this is one conflict we are having here. We should also reach the level of the ordinary person. And the second aspect is reaching industry. The moment we have industry inside of the boat, we could end up with that philosophical problem: who gets the largest share of the cake? This is a question which industry very quickly asks. Actually, we are also asking this. If you look at the discussion which is going on in various Wikipedia circles, the discussion which is going on in the Pirate Party, even also our circles have that problem essentially: who gets the biggest part of the cake? And as soon as we have industry here, we certainly have that problem. So these are just two thoughts to add on.
Well, I think a mitigation to the problem, like who gets the biggest share, is we have to manage to find some way to make sure that it stays open source, like all the prototypes and all the algorithms and such. And I also would like to patent stuff, actually. Not enforcing the patents, but I think it's a good idea. If you have some good ideas,
defensive,
just use the patent system to defend your ideas. We all like and love open source, and we should just patent the shit out of everything that we invent, so no IBM or Sony or Google or whatever can come around and patent our open, free networks that have flat hierarchies and such. And if we have this kind of defense mechanism, I don't really care who gets the biggest share. I don't have a problem if IBM and Apple make even more money with selling open infrastructure, open hardware, and open software. They might do so, I don't care, as long as it's open. We just have to find a way to figure this out. And also, like you said, we need better designers. I mean, we have lots of really good programmers and like researchers, but what's really lacking in the open source community is good interfaces, because my grandmother can't use a command line. And yeah, this is the problem, I think.
Okay, I got a little question about practicality of the things that were proposed in the talk, especially there's a little example in the cantina you talked about where I could ask for a ride. I see, unfortunately, very great potential for abuse where, I mean, spam is common, and if it is in such a way that you can get it everywhere, might pose a problem. And also the distributed networks, if really everyone would participate and send every time to every node peer, wouldn't that generate a whole lot of traffic?
There is actually a quite simple solution to that. There is also a very nice solution to the spam problem in email. The trouble with the whole thing only is we are not using it. The idea with the Mensa situation is everyone can send a packet. I will only accept the packet if it matches a certain proof of work. So before you are able to send me something, I will require, like the anonymous requester in Mensa, I would require at least to do some 1 minute hashing, like Bitcoin is doing. The same thing would be a very nice solution. It's actually a quite old paper, but who was it, guy? I don't get his name. Hashcash is essentially the verb to Google on the whole thing. So I can stop abuse by saying, well, I'm a recipient, I will refuse every attempt to contact myself unless you meet a certain condition. And that is up to you to meet that condition. So it's no longer up to the manufacturer to say, okay, this is a different brand of phone, or this is a Wi-Fi device or a Bluetooth device on the iPhone, which has to be crippled for whatever reason. Every information is accepted. If I don't accept it, I tell you why, and then you can make up your mind whether you are willing to spend three minutes hashing a certain value, meeting a certain target, to ask me whether I will take you along or not. So I can reflect it back to the requester. That actually will be done here.
Probably will research into that direction as well.